So I'd like to talk to you about a project that we're doing with University of Texas Medical Branch, and it gets to some of the issues that y'all just asked about that John was responding to. So how do you do tracking of environmental and human health impacts? Because the phone calls you receive is when someone's sick and they want to know what's making us sick. For a community to track their environmental health over their entire lifespan, the community must be informed of the contaminants that are present in their environment. And that is critical when you go into an area, figuring out what contaminants are present in the environment in which they live, in which they work, and the concentrations of those contaminants, and then the human health impacts associated with the specific contaminants that are in their environment. And then bottom line is they want to know, well, besides all these chemicals and these concentrations, what kind of risk of exposure are we being subjected to? So when you take the universities and the communities and you look at what role each one of them has, it really comes into play when a catastrophic event occurs and contaminates the environment in which the community lives, in which they harvest food and makes a living from the area contaminated. There is a desperate need for technical assistance by university partners to assist the communities with a whole host of environmental and human health issues, not just the scientists that run the GC mass specs. This is the situation that has resulted from the BP crude oil spill that occurred on April the 20th of 2012. The work of university partners is best demonstrated by the work the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston and the Gulf Coast Health Alliance health risks related to the Macondo spill, or as we call it, GC Harms, and that project. The GC Harms project focuses on the fishing communities along the coastal areas of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. So when the fishermen haul in their trawls of seafood and the haul is contaminated with residual oil from the bottom of the water body, the fishermen need to be prepared to document the location of the oil in the environment. When seafood has visible defects such as lesions, lack of eyes, deformities, and they are harvesting these deformed, visible defects, the fishermen must have a mechanism to evaluate those organisms. The fisherman also needs to know the extent of contamination of the seafood that they are harvesting. And then the fishermen need to know the risk of consuming the seafood that they and their fellow fishermen are harvesting, because not only do they harvest it and sell it commercially, they feed it to their families and they consume it themselves. So when we have changes in the environment, when it appears that the environment is, quote, returning to normal, the fishermen need a method of monitoring the improvements. But then when a hurricane comes in and devastates the area, the fishermen also need to be able to assess the damages. And we had another hurricane come in, Hurricane Isaac, at the end of August of this year, and did huge damage and brought in huge quantities of the BP crude oil that was dispersed and subsurface in the Gulf. So it was like the event was happening all over again. So when health impacts are experienced in their community, fishermen need a method of associating those health impacts to the exposure of the chemicals that are contaminating the environment and the seafood they are harvesting. These are communities on the front line. It's their environment. They have to make a living from that environment. They have to feed their family from that environment. And they are the front line, or what we call fence line communities, next to things like petrochemical facilities. The fishing community needs to know how much seafood they can consume safely, and they need to know which species of seafood to avoid due to the levels of contamination. So with this knowledge, the fishing community in the areas that we're doing this project are environmental justice communities, Vietnamese, Laotian, African American, Hispanic, Native American, as well as Caucasians. And a lot of the Vietnamese and Laotians have been here for a number of generations, and again, the older generations speak only the native language. Fishermen, however, are the experts on appropriate locations to designate for sampling. We can go out and say, we think we ought to sample here, 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 and here. The fishermen say, no, 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 this is where you should be sampling. They know where the residual contamination is still visibly present. The oystermen are aware of oyster beds that are productive and those that are negatively impacted. The crab fishermen know the migration patterns of the crabs, the interrelationship to salinity regimes, and can identify seasonal variations in the sampling locations. And these fishermen are experts in selecting sampling locations for analysis of seafood species. So what happens when we do a sampling protocol? We do a workshop for the fishing communities in their communities. The workshops are conducted on sampling protocols to teach the fishing community how to collect their seafood samples, prepare samples for analysis, and document the collecting information. They are fishermen. They are not sample collectors. When you start off and you put on the gloves and they go like, and then you start talking about laying out foil and not contaminating and all. But as you go through the workshop, they understand that it's different from just bringing in the net, dumping it on the table, and putting it in the baskets and then selling it. And they clearly get it, and they become part of the process. The species that we're focusing on in the study that we were involved in are brown and white shrimp, blue crabs, oysters, and finfish. Speckled trout was what we started with. We've expanded it to amberjack, king mackerel, red snapper, grouper, flounder, sheep's head, redfish. And what's important is that in the finfish, we need the fillets, including the belly fat. We need the eyes, so we're taking the whole head. And we need the liver and the kidneys. That's where it gets a little dicey when the community gets to have to do. But they come along and they've got it. And then we need to consider also given the species consumption while harvesting. While you're out on the boat, and John can attest to this, they eat a lot of squid, they eat a lot of eel right on the boat, right out of the water. So they need to know what the contaminants are in these species. The seafood sampling analysis and data presentation by the university partners, the professors at UTMB analyze the seafood samples for polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons. The analytical data is then transformed into presentations that focus on the quantity of each seafood species that can be safely consumed. And that is what is so important. Telling them parts per billion, parts per trillion, parts per million. After a while, they just sort of blanks out. And if you bring just tons of data to the community and say, this is what, when you bring sample results that they collected and you say, you can consume a half a pound of shrimp per meal and you can consume one meal per month for a healthy adult, then they start understanding exactly what it is they're bringing on their boat and what they need to avoid and what they need to limit their consumption. They will have data when you tell them how much and how frequently they can consume specific species safely, which species of seafood to avoid due to levels of contamination, and which locations are where the seafood is most contaminated. The data presentation continues with talking about contamination levels, including in all the various locations along the coastal areas. So if we're in Louisiana in one bay system, it's specific data to that location. The overall data is especially important to shrimp fishermen who have the ability to go in adjacent states, not just their home port state, but they can go in another state. And if they don't have access to data from that other state, they could be in actually harvesting really contaminated shrimp. And then the chemicals that are contaminating the seafood are also detailed so that you can present this chemical, these are the health impacts, and help the fishing community know the human health impacts associated with each chemical, short-term acute health impacts, long-term acute health impacts, and cancer-causing agents. So you use the data to inform the fishing community so they can track these short and long-term impacts. You tell the individuals and the communities are then able to make informed decisions and choices by particularly mothers by pregnant females, those of unborn infants, and in fact, vulnerable population community members. When the community members collect their own samples and review the data for the analysis of their samples, they become owners of the data and use it to make decisions for their family and their communities. The data becomes part of their culture. When the data is put in community perspective, then the community understands what's going on and can make decisions for their own communities. They become educated on the potential health. It also helps them to reduce risk, reduce their exposure, looking at the different people in the community, and then looking at the newborn infants and if there are genetic impacts, they can start tracking those and build on that for the communities into the future. Tracking environmental health impacts over one's lifespan within the community will be able to record current health impacts, document new incidents, document increased and decreased of health impacts. And then when you look at the university partners, this wealth of knowledge contained in the fishing community educates the partners. It incorporates unique community knowledge into the university projects to better represent the situation on the ground and complete data information and results that are most needed. And then the knowledge, the fishing community partners learn how to participate in university research projects as equal partners and participants and gain knowledge of the environment and human health impacts. They are able to obtain information the fishing community needs to reduce their exposure and track their consumption rates, and to be able to measure the success of the project on the basis of percent of the community members involved and in participating in the project. Thank you. So we've been collecting samples since August of 2010 when BP announced that all the oil was gone. We collected water, sediment, soil, and all these tissues. And this information has been made immediately available back to the communities. And this was before the UTMB project started, and they use our protocol for that. That information has been provided when we are assessing the extent of contamination and the remedial activities. We present it to them, and we're frequently dismissed, but we always make sure they have it. And in some of the remediation projects and restoration projects, they're doing it on top of contamination. So I'm going like, before you remediate, you have to clean it up, because if not, you're going to contaminate everything you put there as part of the remedial process. So it's been a fight every inch of the way, but we're always making sure that data is available, and if they choose to use it, they have it.
Are there any ways that the citizens, the fishermen themselves, can be involved in cleanup in the local places where they're done with cleanup?
It's like there's two entities. There's the remediation and restoration people, and there's the people who deal with contamination, and they're just this far apart.
How do you deal with people that are eating shrimp and eels and flounder? How do you get those concepts of combined exposures and mixtures across? Are you dealing with that, or how do you simplify that?
Sure. Yes, we're providing the information back to the people who collected the samples or who went with us out into their areas. And then we provide the information not on just one species, but on all the species, as well as the water and the sediment in the area. And then I have to always say, you have to make a personal decision whether or not. There are two classes of fishermen right now. There are the ones that will not go out and harvest nor feed it to their family. And then there are those that go out and harvest, and they are just also on opposite ends of the spectrum. But it's providing them with the information in their particular area.
And are both camps participating in the collection?
Mm-hmm.